All right, so we are holding on Chof Zayin Omer Beis about five lines or six lines from the end of the narrow lines. Okay, we were discussing like this. The Mishnah had told us a case where you have a bunch of different people bidding on property that Hekdesh is offering for sale. One person bid 10, another 20, et cetera, all the way up to 50. Then we said that the one who said 50 changed his mind and decided he doesn't want to buy it after all. So we said we take away 10 from him because we don't want Hekdesh to lose out, and then we'll collect 40 from the other guy. The same thing if the guy says 40, withdraws, and so on and so forth. Rav Chista had said that that would only be, that Rav Chista, we said, had been understanding that the Mishnah is not talking about one case where you have five different bidders. It's talking about many different cases. For example, one case where it was bid up to 50, and then the guy who said 50 changed his mind. Another case where it was bid up only to 40, and the guy who said 40 changed his mind, etc. As opposed to, Rav Chista says, if, let's say, the guy who says 50 changed his mind, and the guy who said 40 also changed his mind, we would actually make them both participate in the payment, meaning it wouldn't just be each of them is paying 10. What we would do, Rashi learns that Mishalshin, which is the expression that the Gemara used, would mean like this. We would say, the fact that it went from 40 to 50, the bidder of 40 obviously has nothing to do with that. As far as he's concerned, put a maxed out at 40. Therefore, the guy who bid 50 is on the hook for that 10. In addition, we're going to make him go on the hook for 5 out of the 10, the difference between 30 and 40, because he and the 40 guy are participating in that. The difference between 30 and 40 is 10. I'm saying 5 out of that 10 is also on the 50 guy. So therefore, because the 50 includes 40, when he bid it up to 50, it means it was already previously bid up to 40. So therefore, in other words, now when the 40 and the 50 withdraw, then Rav Chista is saying, coincident with the way Rashi learns, it means that now we're going to make the 50 guy is going to pay 15. The 40 guy is going to pay 5. Therefore, Hekdesh has their 20. And good, they'll collect 30. They'll collect 30 from the remaining highest bidder, which is 30. And that way Hekdesh hasn't lost them. Ultimately, they're getting 50. The one person had bid it all the way up to 50. And then now in the end, they're getting 50. They're getting 15 from one, 5 from the other, and 30 from there, and 30 from there. One person, again, we said that you have different bidders, one bid 10, one bid 20, et cetera, all the way up to 50. So Rav Chista is saying if the 40 and the 50 withdrew, and now the highest bidder remaining is 30, and he's willing to buy it at 30, we don't want Hekdesh to lose out that remaining 20.
They withdrew, someone else would bid more than one.
No, it means they withdrew. In other words, they said, never mind, I changed my mind. I don't want to bid 50 after all. But that's one second. Well, that's the thing. So with a Hedyot, you could get away with it because you haven't yet paid, because no money has changed hands yet. When it comes to Hekdesh, you can't. We said yesterday, Amirosya Lagavoya, Tim Sirosya Lahedyot. Once you said that you're going to give Hashem a certain amount, then it's considered the equivalent of handing it over to a Hedyot. Therefore, you are on the hook for it. Handing it over to a Hedyot, to a commoner. Whenever you say, I'm going to give something to Hekdesh, I think you have some poskim that say the same thing applies to tzedakah, then it's the equivalent of handing it over to a commoner. No, it's the equivalent of it, meaning, in other words, that you are on the hook for it, even if you want to change your mind. You can't. So therefore, we're going to make the guy who bid 50 be on the hook for some of the money. We're going to make the guy who bid 40 be on the hook for some of the money. And then the guy who bid 30 is going to get it for 30. And therefore, so again, according to Rashi, what we're doing is the one who bid 30 is paying 30. In addition, the one who bid 40 is paying 5 out of the 40 that he said he was going to bid. The one who bid 50 is going to pay 15. And therefore, Hekdesh winds up with the 50 that they were supposed to. The Rambam has a different understanding of it. The Rambam understands that what you do is, you take the difference between what it was actually sold at and the highest bid, and you divide it by the number. You divide it equally by the number of bidders that withdrew. So in this particular case, it would mean that Rambam would say each of them is paying 10. But in a different scenario, that Rambam gives a scenario. Let's say, for example, that you had. The thing ended up getting sold for 3, let's say, and the highest bidder was 24. So you have, there's a difference of 21. So when, suppose there were 3 bidders, suppose one had bid 10, one bid 20, and one bid 24. So the Rambam says, so then you have a difference of 21 between the highest bidder, between the highest bid and what it actually got sold for. Because in the end, even the lowest bidder withdrew and Hekush wound up being able to sell it only for 3. So there's a difference of 21. We take that 21 and split it evenly among the 3 of them, and therefore each of them has to pay 7. That's how the Rambam learns the Mishalshim. Anyway, we said, how does that fit with our Mishnah? On the face of it, in our Mishnah, we're just saying that each one pays 10, period. Mm-hmm. So we said that because the Mishnah, Rav Chista would understand that the Mishnah is not talking about one continuous case where there were 5 bidders. It's talking about a bunch of discontinuous cases. One where there was a bid up to 50, and then the 50 withdrew. Mm-hmm. One where, yeah, different case where the highest bid was only 40, and then the 40 withdrew. Each time, there's only one bidder who withdrew. However, the Gemara said that doesn't seem to work out because the last part of the Mishnah said that if the one who bid 10 withdrew, then we make the one who bid 10 pay the difference between the amount that it was eventually sold for and his bid of 10. The problem with that is, if we're talking about that there was only one bidder of 10, then the expression should be nifroi mimenu. We have him pay. There's no reason to mention shel eser because he was the only bidder. So that's where we're holding. So, Elo Amar of Chis.
Say that the last bidder is replacing all the other bidders, and he's responsible whether he wants to...
Well, that's the point. In other words, what we're doing is we're saying each of the higher bidders is responsible for some of the money. He's responsible for it. But if Rav Chista is telling us that we don't, or it's not always a fixed thing that we get 10 from each one of the higher bidders, it depends how many higher bidders withdrew, and then we prorate it according to them, then if we're saying that the last case of the Mishnah is that there was only one bidder of 10, and then he withdrew, and Hekdesh wound up having to sell it for less than 10, then the expression in the Mishnah shouldn't be that they make the one who bid 10 pay because there's only one bidder. It should just say they make him pay.
Let me ask you a question. The last bidder, let's say he doesn't withdraw.
Then he gets it for the price that he bid for.
Okay, right? So...
But then we still want the other people to make up part of their bid because we want Hekfish to be able to get the maximum amount that was ever bid. In the scenario in our Mishnah where it was bid all the way up to 50, we want Hekfish to get 50. Therefore,
but we will get 50 if we
how are we gonna, no, how? If the remaining bidder bid only 10, how are we getting 50 from him?
Not the remaining bidder. There's one bidder who bid 50, right?
If there's one bidder who bid 50 and then he withdraws, then
when he withdraws, he bid 50, doesn't he?
That's the point, in other words. Therefore, if he withdraws and he says, never mind, I don't want to buy it for 50, we're still going to make him pay the difference between his bid. No. Listen, I'm trying to explain.
Doesn't make any sense.
Okay. He made a bid. Other people below him also made bids. He withdrew. Again, the scenario of our Mishnah was that you had a bid for 10, a bid for 20, a bid for 30, a bid for 40, a bid for 50.
One after the other.
One after the other. Now the one who... Yes, now the one who bid 10 says, well, there you go, hi. Then the one who bid 50 changes his mind and says, you know what, I don't want to buy it for 50 after all. We're not going to make him pay the full 50, but we are going to make him pay a certain amount. According to the Mishnah, we're going to make him pay 10. And according to the Chista, that is only if he was the only one who withdrew. If the one who bid 40 also withdrew, then we're going to calculate it differently, and then we're going to divide up the amounts that they're paying differently.
Okay.
Again, the last case of the Mishnah, though, was the last thing that said in the Mishnah is that if the one who bid 10 withdrew and Hekdesh ends up selling it therefore for less than 10, then whatever they sold it for, they sold it for. We take the difference between what they sold it for and what this guy did and make him pay the difference. Meaning, in other words, if it was sold for 6, we're going to make him pay 4 so that Hekdesh gets 10. So that's all fine and good. But the problem with that is that according to Rav Chista, if we're talking about that there were higher bidders, then he's not necessarily only paying the difference between the sale price and his bid. We're prorating it between him and the other bidders. And if we're talking about that there was only one bidder, then the wording in the Mishnah doesn't reflect that, because the wording in the Mishnah is we make the one who bid 10 pay, implying that there were other people who bid more than 10. That's where we're holding 6 lines from the end of the narrow lines on Chaklai number 8. Ela Omer Rav Chista, so rather Rav Chista says, Loi Kasha, there's no contradiction between my statement that we divide the amount, between the various bidders and make them each pay some more, some less. According to the Rambam, they're all paying equal amounts, but not necessarily 10. According to Rashi, they're paying different amounts. the versus the Mishnah that says that each one is paying 10, loy kasha, kandu vas achas, kandu ze achazeh. It depends. Did they all withdraw at once, or did they withdraw one after the other? If they all withdrew at once, that's when we would say mishalshim. That's when we would say that we're going to make, that's what I'm going to say, we're going to make the calculations that we made before, and we're going to make the one who bid 50, for example, pay 15, and the one who bid 40 pay 5, etc. Or according to the Rambam, we're going to split the amounts evenly between them. As opposed to, if it was bazaar, chazaar, that is when you have the scenario of our Mishnah, which is that each one is going to pay 10, no more, no less. Tanya Nami Hochi, we learn like that in the Braisa, Chodru Kul and Kechod, if all of them withdraw at the same time, so you had, let's say, in other words, again, that you had, so the first bid was 10, let's say, then you had, there were bids 20, 30, 40, 50. Now, let's say the 20, 30, 40, 50 guys all withdrew their bids and said, I don't want to buy it for that anymore. So then that's what we're going to do, the Mishalshim. That's what we're going to do. Okay, well, in the end, we have somebody who's willing to pay 10 for it. So therefore, according to the Rambam, it's fairly straightforward. Okay, we have a difference of 40. We have four bidders. So each one's paying 10. According to Rashi's calculation, the 50 is paying more, the 50 guy is paying 15. The next two are paying 10 each, and the last one is paying 5. Anyway, so that would be the case, as opposed to, Chazra Kulan Kecha, Mishal Shemineh. If all of them change their mind at once, whichever ones change their mind, Mishal Shemineh, and then we divide up the difference between them. So the question is, what do you mean Mishal Shemineh? Didn't we say in the Mishnah that we take specifically 10 from his possessions, no more, no less? Obviously, that proves Rav Chisda's point, that there's a difference between whether it was Bavasachas or Zachazet. The Mishnah is talking about Gazachazeh. Then we say, for example, when the 50 guy withdraws, at that point, the 40, the one who bid 40 is still willing to pay 40. So there's no reason to make the 50 guy pay 15. What would be the logic? You make him pay 10, which is the difference between his bid and what it's going to sell for, the 50. Because at this point, as far as we know, it's going to be sold for 40. So all he's on the hook for is 10. That's the case of the Mishnah, as opposed to the Braisa is talking about where it was Bavasachas, where the 50 and the 40 withdrew at the same time. Then we say the 50 is responsible for a greater share than the 40 is. Same idea. In other words, we calculate the same idea. We figure out how much is it selling for in the end, how much was the highest bid, and according to Rashi, we figure out basically how much of the increase in bid is each of them responsible for. Hello. And according to the Rambam, we just split it evenly among all of them, which is the usual meaning of Mishalshim, by the way, so the Rambam's understanding seems to fit a little better with the word Mishalshim. Anyway, and then the Braisa, where it says Mishalshim Minehim, it's talking about where is Rabbatah. Okay. Ikav Jeromi Lahum Mirma, then there are those, so how do we get to all this point? We started with Rav Chisda's statement, we argued that maybe it doesn't seem to fit with the Mishnah, and then we ended up saying that there's a difference between the case of the Mishnah and Rav Chisda's case, Bavasachas versus Bavasachas, and we brought a Braisa to support that discussion. So Ikka Jeromi Lahu Mirma, there's another version of this discussion that the discussion went differently. It started by pointing out a contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa. Jeromi Lahu Mirma, that they pointed out a contradiction. Shnan Mirma, Shnan Chozab, yeah, like a Raminu. Come on, we've been learning Shas, but it's the same church. The Mishnah had said that if the one who did 10 changes his mind, then we sell it for its market value, and then we make the one who did 10 pay the rest. But what about, on the other hand, we have a contradiction, because the Braisa says we divide the difference between the sale price and the highest bid. We divide it among all of them. So it's not necessarily that he's paying specifically the difference between his bid and the sale price. And on that, so according to this version, we started with the contradiction, and that brought us to Rav Chisda's statement. So again, the first version was we started with Rav Chisda's statement and ended up pointing out that we have a braisa to support it, and that the Mishnah is talking about a different case. In the second version, we started out with the contradiction between the Mishnah and the braisa, and we answered it by using Rav Chisda's statement. Anyway, that's the halacha, that yes, so if it was bazaar chazeh, then each one is paying 10, or whatever the difference was. Bazaar chazeh is each one thing. If it was bazaar chazeh, if first the 50 withdrew, then the 40, then the 30, etc., then each one is paying 10. As opposed to if it was bazaar, then they're not, if the 50 and 40 and 30, let's say, all withdrew at the same time. Yeah. Then, mishal shim and that's when we divide it. That's when we prorate it among all of them.
At the same level.
So at the, again, according to the Rambam, it would be they're all paying the same level, even if the difference between one bid and the other was different. In the Rambam scenario, for example, you have, let's say, one bid 10, one bid 20, and one bid 24. We're still making each of them pay 7, even though the difference between 20 and 24, for example, is only 4.
Right.
According to Rashi, you're doing the highest bidder is paying 15. The next lower ones are paying, the lowest bidder is paying 5, and the ones in between are paying 10. Okay. Fine. Then we said in the Mishnah, and the next case was, we said if the owner offers to pay 20 for it, and somebody else also offers 20, then we accept the Bailam's offer because they're going to pay a chomish as well, and therefore Hechter stands to gain. Instead of paying 20, he's going to be paying 25. So the question is, he's going to get 25, you know?
25%?
Chomish means 25% of the original, so that when you combine it all together, you have 125%, and the new 25% is one-fifth of that. That's the definition of a chomish. The point is, if the owner bids 20, Hechtish is going to tell them you actually have to pay 25. Your bid of 20 means that you also have to pay a chomish on top of that. So the question is, the Gemara says, remember the chomish object. Are you telling me that Hechtish preferred to get the chomish, and therefore, if the owner bids the same as somebody else, then it goes to the original owner? Or a minu, I have a contradiction from a Mishnah in Maaseh Sheni. We're talking about the dinim of being poyda Maaseh Sheni. So nowadays, in those times, again, you were poyda Maaseh Sheni, and then you took the money and you brought it to your shalayim and you used it to buy food. Nowadays, we don't have a bit of mikdash, so we don't do that. But nowadays, if we have Maaseh Sheni, we're poyda it on a prusa. But back then, you were supposed to be poyda it at its market value. And the Mishnah says, Balabayis owner the sell of Echad owner the sell of the Eser. If the Balabayis, the original owner of the produce, says I'm willing to pay a seller for it, and somebody else says I'm willing to pay a seller plus an Eser, shall sell of the Eser Chayim. The Mishnah says the one who bid a seller and an Eser is the one who gets it. Because he's adding to the Keren, because like this, the owner would have paid only the actual market value, only exactly one seller. This guy is willing to bid higher, therefore he gets it. Now, in the case of Maaseh Sheni, also, if you're redeeming your own Maaseh Sheni, you pay a chomish. If you're redeeming somebody else's Maaseh Sheni, you don't. So why is it over there the fact that the other guy is offering an extra iser gets him the produce, whereas over here the other guy offering, whereas over here we say the owner, yeah. And the answer is, hacha de chomsha rabcha de hektish. The difference is like this. Over here, who does the chomish go to? It's profit for hektish. But what happens? He's bidding 20, for example, for this property, and he's going to end up paying 25. Who does the whole 25 go to? It goes to Hechtish. Hechtish stands to gain. Therefore, Chomish Odir. The fact that the owner, therefore, is paying a Chomish is considered the more important factor. Hossam, the Chomish Rav for the Balabayas, but over there, when it comes to Maaseh Sheni, who is, after all, getting that Chomish? It's not going to Hechtish. When you redeem Maaseh Sheni fruit, the money doesn't go to Hechtish. You yourself keep the money. You just have rules now. You have to bring it to your shalayim and spend it on food. But you yourself are keeping the chomish. Maaseh Sheni. Yes. The redemption money now belongs to you in the sense that, well, not me belongs to you, but whatever. The point is, it's yours to take to your shalayim and spend. It's not Hechtish's. Therefore, the chomish rav for the balabayis. So therefore, the whole rebach, the whole profit anyway, is going to the balabayis, not to Hechtish. Therefore, counter tifra chakra, we would really rather that the keren should be redeemed in the best possible way, for the maximum possible value. Chumsha, lo yich maslon, we don't care if the chayim, we don't care so much about the chayimish in that case. The fact that somebody else is willing to offer a seller and an iser, that's good enough for us.
And that money is actually going to
your shalayim to buy food.
So what is going to actually happen in that
case? Nothing. In the case of Maaseh Sheni, nothing goes back.
Then why are we giving it to the
So that's the thing. What it is, in other words, so Reuven has a bunch of produce of Maaseh Sheni. It's too much for him to take to Yerushalayim or whatever. So he's putting it up for sale, and he says, I would be willing to redeem this for a seller, and then I'll eventually take the seller to Yerushalayim. Somebody else says, actually, I'm willing to have that produce for a seller and an Isser. So the produce itself will become Kolen, and now he has a seller and an Isser that he's going to take to Yerushalayim. So we're saying, because the Keren in that case is more, then that guy gets it. Then we said in the Mishnah, Omer Echad Harayu Shal B'Kola, we started talking about the cases, what if the owner bid 20 and somebody else bid 21? So we say the owner actually has to pay 26.
Yeah,
because he adds an extra fifth. And what we say is we don't increase the fifth. We don't make the fifth float based on the other person's evaluation. We make the fifth still pegged to his original evaluation. He said he's willing to pay 20. Therefore, the fifth is pegged to that, and therefore it remains at 5. Even though somebody else is saying 21 or 22 or whatever, but the owner is going to now be paying 26 or 27 or what have you.
But someone said 27.
One second. The point is, the Mishnah had given cases where somebody else said anywhere from 21 to 25. The point is, the Mishnah had said even if somebody else said 25, the owner pays 30. By the way, now why should we have to make the owner pay extra because somebody else is giving it up? So you have some of the Rishonim, so we touched on this a little bit yesterday. The Rambam learns that we're talking about that when would the owner have to pay the larger amount would be if he's saying, I agree actually to that this is worth an extra pruta over what you're saying. Again, if he says nothing, then he wouldn't, the Rambam learns. Again, we learned before that the owner himself would rather have his own property back. It's covered to him. That's one reason why it's better for him to be buying it back anyway. So therefore, it's quite possible somebody else might say 21. So the owner would say, you know what? I don't want to lose it. I don't want to lose it just because the other guy is outbidding me by one seller. Fine, 21 and a prota. So that would be when we'd make him pay 26 plus a prota. But not if he hadn't sent it. And that's according to the Rambam. According to many other Rishonim, what's unfair about it?
To penalize because you bid higher?
One second, what's penalizing him? He started saying 20. Somebody else said 21. The owner, who doesn't want it to get away so easily, he says, you know what, fine, 21 and a prota. So now, fine, he pays 21 and a prota. He's paying 5 more because to begin with, if he had said 20 and nobody else had outbid him, he's paying 25 anyway. So there's no penalty. What do you mean?
One more penalty. He's 26 for the 25.
He's paying 26 because he spoke up. He said, how is it a penalty? He himself is voluntary. Okay, whatever. He said 20. Somebody else said 21. He says, not just 21, I'm willing to do 21 and one prota. What we will do is we'll say, okay, so here's the deal. You are paying as follows. You're paying 20 that you yourself did. You're paying a chomesh of 20, which is another 5. Plus, you were willing to outbid by another seller and a prota in order to beat this other guy. Therefore, another seller and a prota. So there's no penalty involved. If he hadn't spoken up, then he wouldn't be paying anything.
A prota, how many prutas are there in a seller?
Doesn't matter. There's a few hundred, I think. It doesn't matter. There's 700 and some prutas in a seller.
Okay, so yeah. We're paying 700 times extra
deal. I don't know how I can make this any clearer. He bid 20. Somebody else bid 21. He, at that point, could have said, I don't, fine, I'm out. In that case, according to the Rambam, the other guy would buy it for 21, period. In this case, he said, I don't want it to get away so easily. I'm willing to bid 21 at a prota. Now, we charge him an extra 5 sloyim because he, to begin with, bid 20, and we need to pay a chomesh. If nobody else had out... 20 plus 5 plus 1 plus a prota.
Plus 1 seller.
20 that he bid. 5 for his chomesh. 1 for the seller that somebody else bid. 1 prota for that when he outdid the other guy. So there's no unfairness over here. If he hadn't spoken up, okay, you don't understand, then I'll explain it later. I'm not sure what the problem is.
I understand the numbers, I don't understand the logic.
What? Okay, I'll try it one more time. Somebody else was willing to pay 21. Is he willing to pay 21? If he's not willing, according to the Rambam, nothing happens. The other guy buys it for 21, period. But he says, I actually am willing to buy it for 21 and a prota then. Now, actually, we're actually being more fair to him. If we were to tell him that he has to pay, that he being the original owner, has to pay a chomesh on top of the entire purchase price, then we would be charging him more than 5 sloyim because a quarter of 21 and 1 prota is more than 5 sloyim. It's 5 sloyim and a quarter. We don't. We only make him pay the chomesh of his original bid because the only reason he bid higher over here is in order to beat this other guy, not because he himself really believes that it's worth 21 and a prota.
So the total he's going to pay is?
26 and a prota because he's paying 21 and a prota for his bid plus 5 for a chomesh for his original bid. Okay? If you still don't understand, we'll talk about it afterwards. We can't spend all day on that. Okay. Anyway, the point is, According to many other Rishonim, that's not the case. Even if he hadn't said anything, we would still make them pay. However, some of them say that what it means is, in that case, it means that Hekdesh is going to be getting from two different people. They'll be getting, in this scenario, 21 from the other guy and 5 from him. So that way, they're winding up with 26. But we don't mean the owner is paying the full 26. We mean he's paying 5 and the other guy is paying 21. Anyway, we said in the Mishnah, we have the case where somebody else bid 25, and we said the owner is paying 30. Again, according to the Rambam, we'd have to be talking about that he said, fine, 25 in a prota, and therefore we add the chomish to that and make it 30 in a prota. According to everybody else, it would mean that he's paying the 5 and the other guy's paying 25. But the question is, why is he having to pay at all? The Esrim v'chomish nosim shloshim, we say either there's 30 being paid out. Why? The lemu habaylim, why can't the owner say, why should I have to pay anything? Also, gavra b'charikin. Somebody else came and substituted for me. The maximum I would have paid with my original bid is 25. Somebody else came and did 25. What does it matter? Why are you taking anything from me?
That's my point.
The answer is the omer b'ayilim. That's not okay. Your question was something else. Who hasn't even gotten 25 yet? But whatever. The answer is the omer b'ayilim dinner. The case is we have to be talking about that the owner said I'm going to pay an extra dinner. So the question is the listening dinner. Okay, then the Mishnah should mention that dinner. Okay, the answer is Lloyd Doc. We're not going into those details. We're mentioning the round numbers of Floyd. We're not mentioning the fractions that are dinner. The question is, what do you mean? We see later in the Mishnah it mentions the dinner. V'akatoni imrotza b'aylem v'shloshim v'echad dinner. V'shloshim v'echad vid dinner, ha'aylem kodimin. We had a case in the Mishnah, at the end of the Mishnah, where somebody else bid 26. So now if the owner is willing to pay 31 and a quarter, 31 and a dinner, which would be, because we represent the 26 plus the chomish, then he gets it, and it's not
one
and 31 floyim and one dinner. So then, there's four dinner and a seller. So therefore, so we see that there it mentions the dinner, and we said b'aylem kodimin. In that case, the owner is the one who gets it. So you can't say that they're talking about that there's a dinner. Hello, I'm a rabbi. I'm a b'aylem pruta b'loyd dot. No, rather not a dinner, but he said a pruta. And the mission is not being precise to the level of pruta. Again, according to the Rambam, what we mean is that in all cases of the Mishnah, only if the owner is outbidding him by a prutah, only then are we making him pay the full amount. According to everybody else, it means only in that last case of the 25. If somebody else said 25 and the owner said 25 and a prutah, that is when we're going to make him pay 30 and a prutah. As opposed to if he hadn't said anything, then he could say somebody else is substituting for me because I would have paid 25 based on my original bid. This other guy is also willing to pay 25, so what do you want from me? And yes, then the other guy would get it. Then we said she'ein mesif and chomesh alibule kola. We said that you don't increase the chomesh based on the other person's valuation of the thing. In other words, we said that since the owner started by bidding 20 for it, and then the chomesh is determined based on that, and it stays pegged to that, even if other people are bidding it up 21, 22, 23, etc., the chomesh still remains 5 sloyim, which is 1/4 of 20. It doesn't go up by a dinner per seller that the other people are saying. Now, that would only apply if the hektish that we're talking about had not been evaluated by a board based in 3 people. Now, by the way, I mean, usually, in principle, you're supposed to have, actually, we've learned earlier in the Mesefta, that hektish is supposed to be evaluated by 10 people. But you have different Mephoshim over here, including that maybe the Hachila is supposed to be 10, but the Yevit is 3, or that at least 3 is enough to establish a different din for it in this case, but really it doesn't have to be evaluated by 10. Anyway, Avol Mishim Hektish Begimel, but, says Rav Chisda, if 3 people came and evaluated the field and found it is in fact worth more than 20, then Moisifin, then we do add to the furnish. So in other words, in that case, the case of our Mishnah, again, is the owner bid 20, other people are bidding up, 21, 22, etc., but nobody has actually gone to figure out the actual fair market value of the field. So then we say, fine, we stick with the original owner's bid, and we figure out the chomish on that basis. But if at some point during the thing, a base in of 3 or whatever, a board of 3 experts or whatever came and evaluated it and found, let's say that it's worth 25, well then the chomish is going to go up accordingly. The chomish of
20.
Okay, but if somebody came and evaluated it, then yeah, then it's not enough. In fact, we learn like that in the Braisa. Bet Shammai only mitzifin, Bet Tilul only ain't mitzifin. The Braisa says that Bet Shammai says you add to the chomish, and Bet Tilul adds you don't. Now, of course, the obvious question is, we get one of passing like the Shammai. So, in fact, Tosfos says maybe the Girsa shouldn't be over here Tanya Nami Hochi, because that would mean we're bringing a proof to the Chisda. Rather, it would just be Tanya. The Gemara is bringing a Braisa, and we're going to work out the Braisa and figure out how the Chista comes out according to Betilda. Anyway, so Bishama says you add, Betilda says you don't. So we have to figure out, hey, Dami, what's the scenario that Bishama and Betilda are arguing about? If this property had never been evaluated by Svi, and that's what Rashi mentions over here, that even though in principle you're supposed to have 10 people to evaluate Hekdish, but over here the Chiddush is once you have 10 people. Again, you're supposed to have 10, but Rashi mentions over here, even though you're supposed to have 10, the Chiddush is once you have 3 people assign a value to it, then we don't have to go start looking for 10, then we use that as a basis for figuring out the Chiddush. So what's the scenario? If the property had not been evaluated by even 3 people, my time at the Beis Shammai, then why would Beis Shammai say that you keep on adding to the Chumash just because somebody else is bidding it up? Why should that add to the Chumash? Obviously the Braisa must be talking about where the property was evaluated by at least 3 people. So Beis Shammai would be saying, therefore, that we adjust the value of a Chumash depending on their evaluation, and so what would be saying, that's not, that we don't. The problem with that is, Lamer of Chista is almost a Beis Shammai. So what are you going to tell me? The Chista is saying like Beis Shammai, since when do we pass them like Beis Shammai? Because Rav Chista is saying that if they that it's to be evaluated, then the Chumash goes up, which seems to be exactly what the Shammai is saying. The answer is Lo Olam D'Loy Nishan. No, actually, we can say that the Braisa is talking about where the property was not evaluated by Tzvi. Well, with Shammai Machmirin, but we would say, okay, the Shammai are being Machmir, and they're saying that even though nobody evaluated it, nevertheless, the very fact that other people are bidding up the price means that we should adjust the Chumash. So we could say that that's what it is. Or we could say maybe the Braisa is talking about where it was evaluated by Tzvi, the Epoch. What we could do is we could flip around the opinions in the Braisa. As we often do, Braisa, so we're not necessarily transmitted always that exactly. You have the Tanoim over there, the ones in the Bapi Medrash of the Amoraim are the ones who are transmitting the Braisa. Not always that they transmit it so accurately. So maybe it's the other way around. But Shama Ein Moses, that Bishama is the one who says you don't add, and the Tzillah is the one who says you do, and then Rav Chista comes out like the Tzillah. The problem with that is, if we say that way, the list, then this should be included in the list, in the official list of cases where Bishama is Machner, is Makel, and the Tzillah is Machner. There's an official list of 6 like that in Avius, plus you have a number of others, that you have a few others that later Tanoim say that they had Kabbalists, that Bishama was Makel and the Tzillah was Machmer in particular cases. But this case over here isn't in any of those lists. So we can't say that we should flip around the opinions in the Braisa. Okay, so we go back to our original answer. The Braisa is talking about a different scenario where it wasn't evaluated yet. They're saying just the fact that people are bidding up the price is reason enough to adjust the Chumash. The Tzillah disagrees. They say as long as we're not talking about that it was evaluated by professionals, then by 3 mumchim or whatever, it was evaluated by 3 people. Then as long as that hasn't happened, you're not going to adjust the Chumash. Once that was done, then as your sister is saying, then you adjust it. Then we said, the Mishnah, Omer Echad Harei Shali Be'eshim B'Sheish Chola, we said, if somebody else is bidding 26 for the property, so then we said, if the owner is willing to pay 31 plus a dinner, which the extra 5 plus a dinner is the Chumash of 26. So if the owner is willing to do 25 plus the dinner, 25. The Chumash is 1/4, remember. So the Chumash is 1/4. How do we get 31 1/4? The Chumash is 20%, right? So 26 times 1.2. Yeah, equals 31 1/4. That's what it is. So we're talking about the Chumash of 26 the next year. So we said if the owner wants, then he pays that, and then he gets it, and if not, then the other guy gets it. So the Gemara says, Rotu ein loy rotu loy. So we're saying only if the owner wants to do that, can he do that, but he doesn't have to. Unlike in the previous cases where we said that we make him pay the extra amount, because we don't want Hekdesh to lose. Because after all, here Hekdesh is not losing, because he himself, the owner himself, if he had stuck with his original bid and nobody else had bid higher, he would be paying only 25. So therefore, now that Hekdesh stands to get 26 from the other guy, then we don't care if the whether the owner wants to pay an extra payment or not. So the question, because I'll also gather the harikin, because now he can say, good, I have somebody who's taking over for me. I was willing to pay 25. This guy is willing to pay even more than that. He's willing to pay 26. Therefore, there's no reason that I should have to be involved. Okay, so the question is the dinner my abidke. Why is there an extra dinner over here? Didn't we say that you don't add a chomesh to iluya shalzeh? So actually, what it is like how we get into 31 1/4. The Gemara is assuming that what we're doing is we're taking the 26 the other guy did. We're still keeping the chomesh of before. We're still keeping the chomesh of before, which is 5, and we're adding that to that. The 26 + 5 = 31. So where's the extra dinner coming in?
A dinner is a quarter of a seller.
So Omer of Shesh is Halkha Kama. Okay, what the Mishnah means is like this. Im Rotsu Bailam Me'ikra, we mean if to begin with, when the bidding opened, the owner was willing to pay, listen, Cheshbin Amadiya La'echa L'Shloish of the dinner, that, suppose that the original owner was willing to begin with to pay an amount, which once we add the Chomesh for it, then once we add the chomesh plus we add the various other bids, then it'll come out to 21 and a dinner. Hey, chidomi, and what would be the scenario? Namely, the case would be if the owner opened the bidding not by 20 but by 21. So 21, therefore, the chomesh is going to be not 5 exactly, but 5 1/4. Because that's 25%. So 21 is 5 1/4. So if to begin with he had opened the bidding at 21, and therefore now when this other guy is bidding up to 26. Then we're saying then the total, so the other guy would be paying 26 just. The owner, if the owner at this point, if we were to still hold him to his original bid, plus the guy's extra bid, plus the chomesh, then it would come out to 31 1/4. Then have bailam chomesh, that's what the Mishnah means then, that the owner comes first, because again, then hekdesh is not losing out by having the other guy, by having the owner pay. Abed hekdesh is gaining, because the other guy would have paid only 26, whereas the owner is paying 31 1/4. And if not, if the owner himself bid less than 21 to begin with, then we tell the other person, you got it, because then the other person is paying 26. In other words, the rule is that if the keren that the owner is going to pay is equal, if the keren that the owner is going to pay, let me rephrase that. If the keren plus chomesh of the original, based on the original, on the owner's original bid, if that is at least as much as this new guy is willing to bid, then we make the owner buy it after all. If it's less, then we don't. So in this case, if the owner to begin with had bid 21, and now, therefore, when somebody else bids it up to 26, then by adding the owner's chomesh, we're getting to 31 1/4, then the owner is the one who buys it. Because then we say that the owner to begin with would have been paying 21 plus a chomesh, which is 26 1/4, and the other guy is willing to pay only 26. Therefore, the owner gets it, and they're paying
between 26 and 26 1/4.
Difference would be, I guess, 120. Well, I guess would be 1/20. I don't know, but that's not the point. The point is that in the case where the owner started the bidding at 21. 21 plus a chomesh comes 26 1/4. This other guy is willing to pay only 26. Therefore the owner is the one who gets it, and he's adding the extra, and he's adding the chomesh, and so it winds up because the other guy bid up 26. Therefore, we're adding the chomesh, the original chomesh, on top of the current 26, and we're getting to 31 1/4. But if to begin with the owner had bid less than 21, such that even with his chomesh it's not equal to 26, then if the other guy is bidding 26, then he gets it. No, because that's the thing, because the original owner would have been less than 26%.
Right. Yeah. Why don't we pay more simply than one pays the biggest chomesh who can win the bid?
Because nobody else pays the chomesh other than the owner. If the other guy is bidding 26, he's not paying the chomesh.
What is the total amount? What's the total over what a guy
pays the owner? Right, right.
As long as what?
As long as the original owner's bid plus his chomesh would equal more than the current bid, then he's the one who gets it, and he's paying the chomesh on top of the other guy's bid. Again, so in this case, in other words, the other guy bid 26. Therefore, we're taking his original chomesh of 5 1/4 and adding that. We're not increasing the chomesh to we're not making it 25% of 26. We're still keeping it at 25% of 21, which was his original bid, but we're still adding it on top of the 26. And therefore, he's winding up paying 31 and a quarter. We did. If that's the thing. If there was only one bid, if the owner is the only one who bid, and he bid 21, then he's getting, then he's paying 26 and a quarter. Kevin plus Clemish. We're talking about if other people start bidding, even if somebody else bids as high as 26, that's very nice, he bid 26, but the owner's Kevin plus Clemish would have been 26 and a quarter. Therefore, we still want the owner to get it, and not only to pay 26 and a quarter, but also to pay the extra five that the other guy outbid. Again, according to the NAM, I'm only a fee on top of that, then outbidden by a Kurupta, and according to everybody else, not necessarily.
So for the owner, we take him, we consider the Chemish.
We take the Chemish base, we take the Chemish to the original bidder. To his original bid. Not to the last bid. We keep it pegged to the original bid, but we add it on top of the current bid. So again, in this case, he started out in this last case we talked about. He started out at 21. Therefore, the chomesh at that point is established as 5 1/4, and that's not going to change unless, as Rav Chista said, three people evaluate the field. If somebody else bids 26. We're learning over here.
No,
yourself. If somebody else bids 26, we don't say that guy gets it because 26 is more than 21. We say the original owner, if nobody else had outbid him, would have been paying 26 and a quarter. Therefore, he's still on the hook. Therefore, what we're going to do is we're going to take the other guy's bid of 26. We're going to take the original chomesh that we established at the beginning of 5 1/4, add those together, and that's 31 and a quarter, and that's what the owner is paying. As opposed to begin with, the owner had bid less than 21, such that even with his chomesh, it's less than 26, then we would say, if somebody else bids 26, then there you go, he gets it. Unless the owner was willing to outbid him at that point. Okay, so now, from here until the end of the perek, we're going to be dealing, from here until the end of the perek, we're going to be dealing with a type of hechish called chayim. Chayim is actually, the word chayim, we're more familiar with chayim in the sense of like when a person is put in chayim or whatever, but the basic meaning of chayim is banned or off limits or something. So we're gonna see. There's two different types of chayim. There's chayim gavoya, which go to bedek abayis, and they are, for the most part, those are like regular hektish, although we're gonna see there are some slight differences between them. We are continuing until 9:30. So you have cherme gavoya, which go to bedek abayis. Those are pretty much like regular hektish, even though he declared it using the word cherem instead. We'll see as we go through. There are some slight differences, but for the most between cherem and run of the mill hektish. But for the most part, they're the same. Then you have, that's as far as cherme gavoya. Then you have what's called cherme koyanim. Cherme koyanim is unlike hektish. There's no being poydit. You have to give it to the koyan. You have to give it to the Kohen. It's one of the 24 Matnas Kohona. Once the Kohen receives it, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, then it becomes complete Chorin. See, again, you have, so then the Kohen can do with it whatever the Kohen can do with it whatever he wants. It's his property to do with whatever he wants. It could be a field. It could be metalfalin. That's what we're going to learn now. So there's a fascinating idea behind it that the Chinuch says. The Chinuch says a word on it like this. He says, the word cherem, again, it means banned, it means off-limits, it means cursed or whatever. So he says like this, look, the Jewish people are Hashem's, we Jewish people are Hashem's special people. We are under a bracha of Hashem. The rest of the world, fine, you know, they're outside, you know, they're whatever, maybe they're under a klala or whatever. Therefore, for example, you have, in last week's parashah, v'chramti atoreihem, that the Jewish people say, if we're able to conquer these Knani Melech Arad, we will make their cities cherem. Fine, because they're out of the picture anyway. They're not under Hashem's special Ashkacha. We are under Hashem's special Ashkacha. But what can happen? Sometimes a person, out of frustration or out of whatever it is, might like curse out his property. He might say, Chayrim on my property. Sort of like nowadays, a person might say, you know, the devil take it or whatever. So the chinuch said, you don't want that a yid's property should go out to a place, or should go out into a situation of being cursed or whatever. No, if it belongs to a yid, then a yid is a special, it's part of the special people of Hashem. But okay, you don't want it to be part of your possession. Fine, then Hashem will take it from you. Then it means you're giving it to Hashem. And if you didn't specify, as we're going to actually learn in this Mishnah and in the next Mishnah, we're going to learn machloikas, if a person just says cherim without specifying, is it cherim gavoya or is it cherim karyanim? The halacha is actually cherim karyanim. So in that case, what it is Hashem says, fine, you don't want it. You want to say cherim on it. Fine, we're not going to make it cursed because you're forward to yid, and then yiddish geld is an important thing. But fine, you don't want it. But fine, I'll take it from you, and I'll give it to my servants, the kohenim. Okay, but the kohenim are more especially Hashem's servants. So therefore, and you yourself are saying cherim on it. So he says also, we're going to learn over here. We're going to have a machlokas whether a kohen or a levi can declare a cherem, and we're going to see that Rambam passes according to the opinion that they can't. He says that's the idea, because a kohen and a levi have a special, closer status to Hashem. So with them, they don't even have the ability to say this is cherem and that it should leave their possession. As opposed to a Yisrael, if he says it, okay, it's not going to be cursed, but it's going to go to Hashem's possession. That's a chinuch right there. Okay. So the Mishnah says, Machrim Adam Mitzoyner Mubakari, a person can declare cherem from his sheep or from his cattle, or may avodah from his shivchos of a knanim, he can declare his eved knani or some of his avodim knanim or some of his shivchos knanis to be cherim, or mitzdeach uzasa, or his zdeach uzasa that he inherited from his ancestors. So again, this can be, we can be talking about cherme gavoya, where it's going to hektish. It can be talking about cherme koyanim, where it's going to the koyanim. Either way, yeah. The imhechrim, that's kulam, enam mukramim divir of Eliezer. Suppose a person was machrim all of his sheep or all of his cattle or whatever, then it's not machrim. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. So says Rabbi Eliezer. The Rambam, by the way, did not pass him like that because of the Braise and the Tosefta that says that the Chachamim argue with Rabbi Eliezer on that. So the Rambam passed him from the Chachamim. So they would say, no, in other words, you still have the same thing, cherme gavaya, cherme koyanim. But the point is, Rabbi Eliezer is saying, if a person, for example, were to say, all my sheep are cherim, then nothing happens, because we're going to see in the Gemara where we learned that from. And the Chachamim disagree with that. Yeah, maybe. Okay. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Ma, if you make a kavah chomer, Ma in what gavoya ain't other mashal lahachin kol mechotzer. Ma, a person is not allowed to make all his property cherem, even though it's going to Hashem. Alach kavah v'kamah sheyayod mechotz on mechotzer. How much more so a person is obligated to be careful with their property and not just to spend it and not just to waste it. If you're not even supposed to spend it all on a hektish, how much more so for mundane purposes. So the Gemara still talks. Minohani Mili, where do we know what Rabbi Eliezer says that you can only be maximum part of your possession? The Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. The Pasuk says that the Pasuk goes like this: Acho Chedem Ashiyachem Ishla Hashem Mi Kol Asheloi Me Odrim Uvehemo Mitzdeach Uzasei. So Mi Kol Asheloi V'Le Kol Asheloi. The Pasuk says from all that he has, meaning not that he's maximum all that he has. May Odrim, it says from people, meaning V'Le Kol Odrim, not all the people that he owns. His Avodim Knanim, that is. Mi behema, v'loi kol behema, from the animals, but not all the animals. The pasuk actually doesn't say mi behema; it says all behema. But still, you have all the mems before. May mi kol ashaloi, may adam. So the mem goes on behema as well. Mis deachos, v'loi kol deachos. And the same thing when it says deachos also. It means mis deachos also, but not all of it. Yachol lo yachrim. So you would think maybe the pasuk just means you're not supposed to. It's not a good idea to, like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying in the Mishnah. The im hechrim yu mukhramin, but you would think that if he did declare all of them chayrim, maybe it should work. Therefore, the pasuk says ach ko chayrim, and the ach is a miut, meaning that not only you're not supposed to, but it's impossible to, because it doesn't work to be machrim all of one type of property. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. So says Rabbi Eliezer. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and again Rabbi Elazar will come this week, right? And Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says again, as he said in the Mishnah. Ma im legavoya einan mashar lahachim kol mechotzer. Ma doch, when we're talking about giving it to Hashem, a person is not supposed to declare all his property, is not able to declare all his property chayrim. Alachas kamal kamashi yadim kos al mechotzer. How much more so a person has to be careful about their possessions and not use them and not waste them on mundane things. Okay. So that's the bright thing. Now, the question is, why do we need the pasuk to be saying all these men? Why mi kol asheloi and mei odam uvehema umis deach uzotet? So it's tzricha. We need all of them. The e kasev rachmanim mi kol asheloi. If the Torah only mentioned the first mem, the generic thing that you can't be machrim everything that you have, Havamina. Then you would say kol de isloy lalachrim. Okay, it means you can't declare everything that you own cherem. Avol min echad lechrim ekolay. But maybe you could be machrim all of one min, all of your cattle or all of your sheep, let's say. Therefore, kol tzerachmanim may adam v'loy kol adam. Therefore, the pasuk mentions may adam to say that it refers to a specific type of possession also.
So it can be
So it can't be, in other words. Can't be, for example, not call other, it can't be all of your avodim tanim, for example,
right,
to declare them fair. The e kotz rachmanim may adam, but if the Torah only wrote may adam, you would say, okay, so like dagile b'lay avoda. Okay, because you know why. The Torah doesn't want you to declare all your avodim to be chayrim, because you need somebody to work for you. Avol soda. But you would think when it comes to a field, maybe you could be machrim all your field. You won't have any fields of your own. Where are you going to get produce to be able to feed your family? Okay, so it's disturbed, and you'll become an artist or some other kind of worker in somebody else's field, and you'll get a percentage or a fixed amount or whatever of the crop. So therefore, the Torah also needs to mention it by steach uzase. The iash in and hani tarki. On the other hand, if the Torah only told us went by these two, by Odom and by Sodeh, you would say, okay, Mishum Dehafa Chiyusa Vahafa Chiyusa. Okay, both Avodim and Sodeh is essential to your normal way of living. So therefore, you can't be Machlim all of them. Avon Metaltlin Lachamino Kolu, but maybe you should be able to be Machlim all of your Metaltlin. Srichi, therefore, it needs to say, Mikola Shaloi, that you can't even be Machlim all of your Metaltlin. Even though you could argue, you could easily get by without all your Metaltlin. And
so you still
are not supposed to do it, right?
And that's because it's three men.
Because you have all these different men, right? Mi kol ha'shaloi, mei odom u behema. Behema lomali, then why does it need to have a mi or by behema? If that includes, we said each of the other ones. We said avodim, sodeis, and metaltlin. Why do we need a separate one by behema? Look at the Tanya, because we have a braisa like this. Yocho yachrim odom b'noyu vitoi abdev shechotei ivrim, u'tzdei miknosei. You would think that a person is able to declare cheirem his own son or daughter, which would mean, therefore, in other words, in effect, that they belong to Hekdesh, or they belong to the Kohenim, as the case may be, or Abdeb Shekhote Ivrim, or his Jewish slave or maidservant, or a field that he bought from somebody else in the time when Yovel was in effect, where it's going to return to the original owner in Yovel. No, Tamabayim of Behema. Therefore, in order to tell us not, the Pasuk mentions Behema. Ma Behema Yeshle Rishus Lamoshua, just like a Behema is something that you have Rishus to sell it, because it's yours free and clear, you can sell it. Af Kol Sheyeshle Rishus Lamoshua, the same thing, you can only be Machrim, something that you have Rishus to sell. So your own son or daughter, or your evident Shifcha Ha'ivrim, or your Sdei Mikna, you don't actually own those things. In the case of a Sdei Mikna, it goes back in Yovel. In the case of an Eben and Shifcha Ivri also, they go free after 6 years of Yovel or Simonim or whatever it is, as the case may be. And your own son and daughter also, they're not considered your property to that extent. So one second. So you could ask, mainly your son, the Torah never gives you permission to sell your son, but your daughter, the Torah gives you permission to sell it as an Amma Ivriya. Yocho Yachrimena, maybe you should be able to make her Chayim. No, Tamabayim of Behema. Again, therefore, the Pasuk mentions Behema. And we mean not just that you have something that you have a right to sell, but that you have a right to sell forever. Ma Behema, Yeshle Rishus L'moichu L'oilam. You can sell an animal. It's not just a fixed-term sale. Yeah, you sell the animal. Yeah, it's over. The same thing. What can you be machrim? Only something that you have the ability to sell permanently. So not even your daughter, because even if you sell her as an Amar Ivriya, she's still back after 6 years or simonim or whatever.
You sell her as your daughter.
What do you mean you sell her as the only way that a man is allowed to sell his daughter in halacha is as an Amar Ivriya. And then her maximum term is 6 years or until she reaches puberty, whichever is first. So from that we learn that you can't be machrim these things. Which means, therefore, so there is one key difference between cherem and regular hekdesh. We've learned before in the previous perek that you can be machdesh, you stay mitzvah. You can be machdesh a field that you bought from somebody else. All it means is, come yovel, it's going to go back to the original owner. Or actually, whereas cherem, we're saying you can't be machdesh, you stay mitzvah. So even if we're talking about cheirem l'gavoya, you have it, which goes to bedek abayis, you still have that distinction. If you say it in a form of hektish, I machdish this field, then it works, and the hektish is in effect until yovel, and then the original owner gets it back. But if you say I'm machrim this day mikna, nothing happens. Because you don't have the ability to give it away permanently. You don't have the ability to sell it or give it away permanently. The Minchas Chinuch talks about the
Rambam has to be there
alone. Yes. So so again, if it's Bedek HaBayis anyway, what's happening is Bedek HaBayis, you're anyway buying it back from Bedek HaBayis and they're using the money, and if it goes to the Kohenim, then fine, it goes to them and then they can do with it whatever they want, but still, yeah. So the Minchas Chinuch talks about, he discusses some questions, what about, would we say, are there other differences between Chayrim and Hekdesh, for example, are you paying an extra Chaymesh when it comes to redeeming your Chayrim from Hekdesh? He says, on the face of it, maybe yes, but he infers from the Rambam that maybe not, so he's not sure about that particular detail, and similarly with some of the other details. Do we say the Zerach HaMeferim B'Chamishim Shekel Kosef? Do we do the Sela and Punyan rate per year that we've learned before with a Sdei Cherem, or do we not? So yeah, he has a few questions like that. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah and in the Braith, the Omer Abolozah Ben Azariah Im L'Gavoya Einar Am Nashoy Chola, we said that if you can make a Kavach Chayim, a Madach, you're not supposed to give away all your possessions to Hashem, how much more so that you're not supposed to squander them on mundane things, yeah. So the question is, Haino Tanakama, isn't Rav Elazar ben Azariah saying effectively the same thing as the Tanakama? What is he adding? The answer is, Ikka B'nai Adir Abila. There's an actual argument between them. It's not just Rav Elazar ben Azariah is not just telling us a nice Musa vote. There's an actual argument between them in Halacha about the point that Rav Elazar said. The Amr of Elah, but Usha Hiskinu, in Usha, which is a city in the north of Eretz Yisrael, the Sanhedrin was headquartered there for a period of time, in the years after the Churban. So in Usha, they made a takana, Hamavazdez, Al Yavazdez, Yosim Achoymesh. If a person is going to spend money on tzedakah, it shouldn't be more than a choymesh of his possession. We have, by the okay, bizbuz means spend, means being a spendthrift, basically, because that's what he's doing. He's giving out. He's spending it. Okay, it's for a valid purpose, but nevertheless, the fact is it's still called amavazdez. Which, by the way, though, you know, we're going to be talking about in Tanya in a couple of days, where the Alter Rebbe talks about that this is only if you're giving tzedakah without a particular purpose, without a particular need in mind. But if you're giving tzedakah because you were supposed to fast X number of fasts for Tshuva, and instead, because you're too weak to fast, you're instead giving tzedakah, then the limit of a choymesh doesn't apply the same way as the Alter Rebbe says. You wouldn't limit yourself to a choymesh if you're spending money for doctors. The same way, you can't limit yourself.
Yeah.
But the point over that I've talked about, you could fast a half a day, and two such fasts count as one, whatever. You can look in paradigmal of a Geras HaTshuva. It's going to be the Shir Tanya. It's going to be the Shir Tanya 2 days from now. But whatever, we can look at it afterwards. But the point is, in principle, a person is supposed to fast X number of fasts for various averas they did. But in practice, it's hard to do that. People are weak. So therefore, the Alter Rebbe says, better instead of fasting, give lots of tzedakah. And you're poured each of your fasts with, as the Alter Rebbe said, chai gdolim polish, 18 large Polish coins, whatever that's worth in modern money or whatever. The point is, in other words, give lots of tzedakah, and then the samavazdez, alivazdez, yosim achomish doesn't apply, because you're not doing it samazo, you're not mavazdez, you're not just spending it without a particular idea in mind. You're doing it in order to heal your neshama, and that's no less worthwhile than healing your body. Okay, so the point is, and the Braitha continues. So the point is, in other words, in our Mishnah, so Rav Elazar ben Azariah holds the Rav Elah's din. He's saying that the maximum you should be spending is Chaymesh. So therefore, Rav Elazar ben Azariah is saying that Madach, even for Gavoya, you're not supposed to be doing anything. How much more so if you're giving to a head yet, you should be careful not to be spending too much. So he holds the limit of 1/5. Whereas Rav Eliezer in the Mishnah doesn't hold of that limit. He says as long as you keep yourself something in the case of Haramim and in the case of Tzedakah, then it's okay.
Something like a
Kuta? Yeah, whatever, some small amount, whatever. The Braitha continues, Maisa be'echad shebikash levazdez yosim achemesh. One time it happened that somebody wanted to spend more than 1/5 of his possessions on Tzedakah. V'lo yinichu lechaberav, and his colleagues didn't allow him to. Umanu, and who were his colleagues, Rav Yesheva. Amrivah, another version is Rabbi Sheva was stopped him from doing it. Was the one who stopped him. The Ikadah, the Amrivah, another version is the other way around. Rabbi Sheva was the one who wanted to spend more. And his friends did not allow him. Umanu, Rabbi Akiva, and who were his friends in that case, Rabbi Akiva, told him you're not supposed to. What? And they're both from Asar Arumah, if this is true. But not more than a fifth, right? Okay. Mishnah says, so as we just said before, you can't be machrim any of these things. We brought the Braitha and the Gemara. So now we have a Mishnah that tells us the same thing, that if a person declares chayrim his son or his daughter, or his Jewish male or female servant, or field that he bought, ain muhram, and then it's not muhram. She'ain a machrim, davar she'ain a shalos. You can't be machrim something that doesn't belong to you. It doesn't belong to him permanently, as we said before. So it has to be like a behema where you'd be able to sell it permanently. Rabbi Yehuda says that a Kohen or a Levi is not able to declare a Cherem, because as we're going to learn later, the one of the major types of Cherem is Cherem Kohenim, and those go to the Kohenim anyway. So therefore, he says that Kohenim and Levium can't do it. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon and Kohenim and Machrim, and Rabbi Shimon says I can agree that Kohenim can't declare something Cherem, Shacharam and Shalahem, because after all, if you declare something Cherem, it's anyway going to the Kohenim. So what's the point of taking it from one place and putting it in another? Balavim Machrimin, but says Rabbi Shimon, a Levi is able to declare something Cherem, She'en Acharam and Shalahem, because after all, Charamim don't go to Levium, so why shouldn't they be able to declare a Cherem? Omer Rebbe, so Rebbe says, Nirin Dibir Rebbe Yehuda B'Kakoyz. Omer Rebbe, Nirin Dibir Rebbe Yehuda B'Kakoyz, it seems logical to accept Rebbe Yehuda's opinion when it comes to land, Shenamah Piyachuzat Olam Hulahem, because the Pasuk says the land that Kohen and Levim have inherited should be an eternal inheritance for them. So therefore, and that rule applies to both Kohenim and Levium. So therefore, it's more logical to say that a Levi shouldn't be able to be machrim his property, his land, because the post wants it to be his achuzah for them. The divir of Shimon ben Metalfelin, but it seems more logical to accept Reb Shimon's opinion when it comes to Metalfelin, she'en acharamim shalahem, because Reb Shimon's right. After all, cherem doesn't go, cherem don't go to the Kohenim, they don't go to the Levium. Rabbi is saying, he's kind of splitting the difference. He's saying, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that neither Kohenim or Levium can do it would apply to land. Reb Shimon's opinion that Kohenim can't, Levium can, would apply to Metalfelin. Okay. So it's more sort of there, Rabbi Yehuda. What would Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? Where is Rabbi Yehuda getting his opinion from? Bishlema Kohenim ain machrim. And I can understand why he says Kohenim can't make something Kohenim. Because, yeah, like we said in the Mishnah, Shacharam and Shalahem, because after all, the Charamim go to them anyway. So what's the point of a Kohen being machrim something, and he's just going to be able to get it right back?
You could say the ones that are not in Mishmar could...
We're going to deal with that point, too. Okay, great. We're going to deal with that point, too. Yeah, one second. Hold on. So we can understand why Kohenim can't be machrim, because anyway, they're getting it back. But why is Rabbi Yehuda saying a Levi can't make something cherem? I can understand why they shouldn't be able to make kauk a cherem, because we have a pasuk that Rebbe quoted in the Mishnah, that it's supposed to be an eternal inheritance for them. So therefore, that applies to Levim as well. It should be an eternal estate for them. It says about the land of the Kohen and the Levium by the Ori Mikvot, yeah. So therefore, I can understand why the Torah wouldn't want them to be machrim their land. But why should a Levi not be able to declare his metalfelin cherem? It's true, it's not going to be stained by him. It's going to the Kohen anyway, so what's the problem? The answer is, the positive, when it mentions this concept of cherem, says, as we quoted the policy before, if a person is machrim, anything that he owns, which means metalfelin, or his de'achuzasai, in other words, that we have together, mikol ha'shaloi umis de'achuzasai, so we have a hekesh, makesh metalfelin and karkoi, so we have a hekesh between metalfelin and karka. So if a levi is not able to be machrim land, and we know that because de'achuzas olam hulahem, then he can't be machrim metalfelin either, because we have a hekesh between them. So that's where Rabbi Yehuda is getting his opinion that Levium are not able to be machrim at all. Okay. One second. Rabbi Shimon. What is Rabbi Shimon? So let's work out Rabbi Shimon now. Bishleima Kohenim Kedam Baron. Okay, I can understand what he says, why Kohenim are not able to be machrim, because they're going to be getting it anyway. El Levium. Bishleima Metalfelin Lachrim. I can understand why Rabbi Shimon says that Levium are able to be machrim Metalfelin. The Loy Makish, because he doesn't hold of that Hekish. So okay, in that case then, fine, a Levi can't, so okay, then a Levi can be Machlin Metalfelin. He holds of the Hekish, maybe he's teaching us something else. El Makauki, Amai, but why would he hold that Levium are able to be Machlin their Kaka? Hoksiv Achuzat Olam Hilahem. Doesn't the prophet say it's supposed to be their eternal inheritance? So how, according to him, can a Levi go against that and be Machlin his land? The answer is, my machrim in nami dekama metalpli. You're right. When Rav Shimon says that a levi is able to be machrim, we mean metalpalin. We mean the not. Okay, so the question is, but where that can't be. In the Sefer, Rebbe, Omer Rebbe, then the Sefer Rebbe says, Nirin Divir Rebbe Yehuda Vimakauti. It seems logical to accept Rebbe Yehuda's opinion when it comes to Karka, the Divir of Shimon Vimakauti, and it seems logical to accept Rebbe Shimon's opinion when it comes to Matauti, implying each one of them holds their opinion by both. Miklal did Rav Shimon Makarki Nami Kama, implying Rav Shimon would say that the same rule applies to Metalpil as it applies to Karka as well. Because it sounds like Rebbe is saying Rav Shimon himself would say that they can be masculine both of them. I'm saying if we're gonna pass in Halacha, it makes more sense to pass in like Rav Shimon when it comes to Metalpil. But implying that Rav Shimon himself says that a Levi is able to be masculine Karka as well. The answer is Hoki Karma. No, that's not what the Mishnah means. What the Mishnah means is Amar Rebbe, Nirin, Divi Rebbe Yehuda, Lir Rebbe Shimon, B'Karkoi. It means Rebbe Shimon accepts Rebbe Yehuda's opinion when it comes to Karka. Nirin does not, usually Nirin means it seems more logical. So we thought it meant that Rebbe is saying it seems more logical to me to accept Rebbe Yehuda's opinion in one case and Rebbe Shimon's in the other case. Now we're saying no, that's not what the Mishnah means. It means Rebbe Shimon himself finds it logical to accept Rebbe Yehuda's opinion when it comes to Karka. Rav Shimon himself is only arguing with Rav Yehuda when it comes to Metalpin. But he agrees with him when it comes to Karka that, in fact, that a Levi cannot be Machrim it on the grounds of Piyachu Zatay Lambulah. So we don't actually have the machlokas between them by both Karka and Metalpin. They both agree that a Kohen and a Levi cannot be Machrim Karka. The machlokas is, Rabbi Yehuda says if they can't be machrim karka, they can't be machrim metalpalin either. Rabbi Yehuda says if they can't be machrim karka, they can't be machrim metalpalin either because of the hekish. Rabbi Shimon says, never mind the hekish. Karka they can't because piyachu zatolam. Metalpalin they could because it's not staying by them anyway. It's going to the kohenim. And so therefore, so that's what the machlokas is.
So one says neither, and one says metalpalin only.
We'll continue tomorrow, Beth Hashem, and we'll continue talking about this topic of Haram.